recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Fire up the projectors, turn on your TVs, and adjust your antennas. It's time for the Screen Addicts Podcast with your hosts, Chris, Steven, and Jeremy.
And welcome back to the Screen Addicts Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris Twisted Sister. Wait. Never mind. Keep going.
Start over. I'm so sorry. Just start it from here.
You know, we may have to rethink a new beginning because this has been the last 2 or 3 weeks that this has not gone very well.
Not at all. Well, you hesitated. I thought you were done. I didn't know it was some dramatic pause for your nickname.
And then there was that quick, oh, wait.
Do you want to just start it from here? Just cut to
no,
this
we'll
point.
Just keep going. We'll just
are
keep,
you sure?
Yeah, we'll just keep going. It's all good.
Okay.
Go ahead, Steven.
Well, I am Steven Shyamalan Twist Sosa.
I am Jeremy Twisty, the clown.
Well, I'm not a sister. But that's a good song.
It's a band.
It's a band, dude.
Oh, see? Even that. Jeez.
Man, we are already
one of those nights.
We're all twisted up already.
Well, welcome to the Screen Addicts Podcast, a podcast where we talk about everything on a screen, big or small. And this week, we will be talking about twist endings in movies. Our favorite, double takes, twist endings. How else can you say it?
I mean, that pretty much sums it up. It's a shocking ending predicated on an unexpected twist to the plot.
Exactly. There you go. So, that is our main topic this week. We're going to be rattling off our favorite twist endings in movies in lieu of the Orient. Is it because of the Orient? The Murder on the Orient Express?
That's kind of what I was alluding to, because the original provided...
Does that even have a twist ending?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know about the remake, but the original, it had a pretty good twist ending. And so I was starting to think, you know, what could we inspire from this particular film? I don't know why we chose that one. I guess because we didn't want to rattle off our favorite Will Ferrell movies from Daddy's Home, too.
Even though... Daddy's Home beat Murder on the Orient Express. That pisses me off.
Yeah, but you should have seen that coming. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you should have.
Yeah, y'all kind of warned me about that, didn't you?
You know, I think Murder looks good. It's just the things that I read about it was that it wasn't fun. It wasn't anything. Like it lacked
boring
personality.
Kenneth Branagh movie.
Yeah, and it with the cast involved, it had no personality and no charm or charisma, which is bizarre considering all those involved, but
right,
hey, you know, I don't know why they would remake it in the first place, but
I know,
there you go,
what's the point?
See, y'all ruined my date night. We were gonna go to the movies and watch this movie, and I told Tasha, I said, you know, the guy said probably wait on this one. And so we did. And so for Friday night, our old boring asses stayed in and did nothing. We caught up with Grey's Anatomy.
Woohoo! Did you gaze into each other's eyes?
No, I was asleep through the Grey's Anatomy episode, but anyway. Before we head off into the main topic, we have our recently watched segment right now. So, as always, Jeremy, what have you seen this week, my friend?
Let's see here. Besides the usual keeping up with Gotham, The Flash. Man, The Flash is really good this season.
Okay, speaking of The Flash, I am 2 episodes behind. The one I'm on right now is the one where it's Girls' Night Out. Yeah. So I think I'm 2 behind. Anyway, is it still going on to where Iris is trying to run the show?
Ugh.
Because that's really pissing me off now. Like, that needs to just go on past that.
Who even put her in charge of anything? I don't understand that.
I think she took it upon herself when Barry told her whatever he told her at the end of the last season. And so she, to move on, she had to become and take charge and do this and that so she could keep her mind off of him not there.
Yeah, so
she's basically the character Felicity in Arrow or Wynn in Supergirl, the all-knowing Overwatch type of Oracle character that is basically their eyes and ears while they're out on the field. But the thing about Felicity and Wynn is that they actually provide some technical sensibility towards themselves. Mm-hmm. Iris has no experience in anything. No. She was just a reporter last season, and then she's going to be running this high-tech facility while everybody else is doing all the work. It's just, it's so laughable.
You know what her qualification is, dog? She is the daughter of a cop.
Yeah, that, and she's Barry's fiance. So.
And
yeah.
She is queen of everything.
Nepotism pisses me off.
And she fine?
And Chris is like, forget everything I just said.
Anyway, okay. Sorry, Jeremy. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, my man.
Okay, and let's see here. Gotham's really good still. Let's see here. What else have I been watching? Oh, yeah. I did check out last couple horror movies that left over from Halloween. I watched Jigsaw. That's an interesting entry to the Saw universe. It's got some interesting deaths, I guess. The acting sucks. Like every Saw movie, the acting is awful. Mm-hmm. And it's another Saw movie. There you go. Buckets of blood, lots of death, and people getting dismembered in very nasty ways.
Hey, let me ask you about Jigsaw. Is it a continuation of the final chapter, or is it some kind of quasi remake or something?
Oh no, it's a sequel.
Okay, so it picks up right after the final chapter.
Not right after, several years later, after what's his butt's been in the ground for years.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I watched Leatherface. The little entry into the Texas Chainsaw Massacre that's pretty much the prequel to the Leatherface character. You get kind of his name and how he became Leatherface. And throughout the entire movie, you think it's this one dude, and it ends up being this other dude, and okay, it's bloody, it's a Texas Chainsaw movie. It's not anything great, but okay, if you like bloody shit, then there you go.
Then you love it, don't you?
I mean, it wasn't anything I would run out and go buy or anything. Mm.
This feels like it's the 15th origin story of Leatherface, dude.
It pretty much is. It's ridiculous. This movie is like that Texas Chainsaw 3D they did. It shouldn't have been made at all, period. This thing needed to go away. It's like the Transformers movies. They just need to stop.
How dare you, sir. The Last Night was the best film of the year.
Dilly Dilly.
Dilly Dilly.
Oh, we can stop that shit right now.
No Dilly.
No doubt.
Oh, gosh.
That is a funny commercial, though.
Okay. Is that all you got, man?
Yeah, that's all I got.
Man, you watched some stuff.
Yeah, you did. And not just football.
Well, the Cowboys got their ass kicked. Who cares?
Yeah, that's right. Who cares about football?
Yeah, I know. I was about to say, like, I don't think we have much to say from any perspective.
And we lost fantasy.
Ugh. Oh. What is our record now, actually?
6-2 or something like that.
Not bad.
I don't know.
There's like a...
We have like 4 losses.
Do we? I don't know.
Oh, shit.
Sorry, my bad.
Hope has dissipated.
All right, so for my really recently watched, like I was telling y'all, we caught up on Grey's Anatomy, kind of behind on Flash, keeping up with Walking Dead, which, it was a very sad episode this week.
Dude!
Yeah.
Oh!
You
know, oh, Shiva!
Wasn't going to say it, but okay. Yeah, it's... Like, everybody in the whole damn show could have died, and I'd been happy if they would have kept Shiva alive, but...
Yeah, there was no reason to kill off Shiva, even though that's how she died in the comics.
Which, I guess it's okay that they're keeping to the comics-ish.
Well, I heard that the king, Ezekiel, he... died during that gunfire sequence, but here he's
he got away. He's still alive in the comics.
Oh, okay. I thought he got killed in the comics.
No.
Cool. So yeah.
The main difference between King Zeke from the TV series and the comics is in the comics his romantic interest is Michonne, and on the TV show, it looks like it's going to be Carol.
Carol, yeah.
Yeah.
My brothers and sisters of the hilltop!
moving
it's
on.
It's getting pretty good.
It is.
It's been pretty fast-paced, man. This is everything Jeremy wants in a season of The Walking Dead. Just bullets, blood,
it's
and mayhem.
It's about damn time. Three full seasons just walking around like the damn walkers.
And the show is called The Walking Dead, you know? It's in the title.
It's not The Sprinting Dead.
I mean, yeah, but still, you just having your characters doing nothing but just trolling around on screen.
I have a quick question. What is the biological shelf life of a walker? I mean, shouldn't they have all just... died out naturally at this point?
Well, they don't eat.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But the brain function of a walker, what's the lifespan of something like that?
I don't know. They live forever.
I guess so.
Apparently they do. I mean,
until they get shot in the head.
Right. If we can harness that kind of long-range lifeline, we'd all be sitting pretty.
It's been a rough 35 years already. I don't need to extend that shit. All right. So, and then I have started down the road in preparation for Justice League on Thursday. So on Sunday, I watched Man of Steel. On Monday, yesterday, I watched Batman versus Superman.
I'm sorry.
you know, and the more and more I watch it, dude, the more and more I like it.
I feel the same way.
Like, what takes me out of it is the very end, the whole damn Martha scene.
Where'd you say that name?
Like,
Chris, don't you listen to him. You keep going, sir.
Oh, I am.
Don't you say that name.
Don't apologize for liking BVS. I like it, too.
I love BVS. I mean, Jeremy can scream all he wants. I don't give a crap. But, you know.
That's your sad Batman love. It's okay.
I love sad Batman.
I love sad Batman.
I'll take any Batman at this point.
So, and then... Tonight, after, while I'm editing this show, I will be watching yet another hot mess in Suicide Squad.
Why? That has nothing to do with the proceedings you're going to be going to
but
see.
It's all the DCEU.
But Batman's in it.
And Batman's in it, so.
For about 2 minutes.
Why are you ruining his fun, Jeremy?
Yeah, you are. And then tomorrow I'll be watching Wonder Woman. And then Thursday will be Justice League Day.
Are you going on Thursday?
Oh, yeah. Thursday, 6 o'clock.
Sweet.
Steven, do not forget to ask people outside of the theater this time, please.
Yeah, I'll try my best to remember. I'm all by myself. At least you had Maddox with you. I'm just like, hey, can I interview you for a podcast?
Like, get away from us, creep.
That's... You do that voice, too. It'll be great.
I know, right?
Yeah, do the Crypt Keeper. That'll attract everyone.
and tonight I introduced the youngest, my three-year-old, to Jurassic World.
Oh, sweet.
I'm pretty sure he'll be up screaming here in a little bit.
Yeah, he'll be all right.
And then I watched last night... after I got home from the gym. That's right, fellas. I went to the gym. And not my
What'd
friend
you do there?
Jim, not my friend Jim's house. The actual gym.
Some tacos.
No tacos. No, and let me tell y'all. Being on a treadmill and an elliptical and having a podcast to listen to... makes it go by so much faster.
Oh, it does.
Oh, dude, I was listening to Hey Down in Front. They do a podcast where they like commentate the movie as they're watching it. And their episode I listened to last night was on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Nice.
It was
the
great.
Original one?
Yeah, the original one, yes. Oh, it was... Those guys are hilarious, man. If you haven't listened to them yet, you need to. It is wonderful. And it made the hour and a half that I was at the gym seem like 30 minutes. Straight up. Anyway, so I get home from the gym. Can't go to sleep. So I turn on Netflix, and I'm like, hey, Steven said this movie's pretty good. I'll watch it. Because I can't go to sleep, and it's only an hour and 25 minutes long. Well, it's the Netflix original, The Babysitter. And, Steven, you are a damn liar. This movie was stupid.
Do you not know what kind of movies I watch, Chris?
Yeah, I know.
Tread lightly, my friend.
I mean, the cast was good. You had Bella Thorne, Hannah Mae Lee, and Robbie Amell. I thought, yeah, might be good. And that, but see, the best part of it to me is the way the Asian girl died.
Yeah,
she got blowed up by some bug spray. It was amazing. But all in all, actually, it was actually pretty funny. And, so, if you're up late, an insomniac like me at times, and you're needing a good horror comedy to watch, check out The Babysitter. It's not too bad. It's nothing that I would go and go put in your queue, but if you happen to be scrolling past it and you have nothing else to watch, try The Babysitter. But I think that is all for me this week. Steven, what do you got, man?
I watched the Will Smith film that came out last Christmas called Collateral Beauty.
Oh, good one.
And did you see it, Chris?
Yeah, I've seen it.
You saw it with Tasha, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it.
Right?
It was a bit predictable, and I kind of figured certain things out a lot sooner than I was supposed to, but... Mm-hmm. It didn't deter me from still enjoying the film. I thought it was really good. And it was one of those movies where it just got critically destroyed. I mean, it was sitting at, what, 13%? I mean, it just got lauded. And for reasons that I don't entirely understand, I mean, I know the plot's a bit contrived and some things are a little bit, like I said, too predictable, but sometimes being predictable is okay. You know, if it's giving you something that you want to see as an outcome or conclusion in a film, it's not so bad. And I don't know. I really enjoyed it. The acting was well done. Will Smith's performance in that was really, really good. Like,
I loved
just,
it.
I really don't understand what the whole problem was. It wasn't too hokey. It wasn't too, oh, look at me, it's a Christmas miracle movie or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't really get that. But I was engaged with the movie. It also has an amazing cast. It has Edward Norton, Kate Winslet, Michael Peña, Helen Mirren, Keira Knightley. I mean, with a cast like that, I mean, they just show up, act, do what they need to do, and then it's over. And I don't know. I don't really understood why that flopped, but what can you do? I also finally finished up Ozark. Since that we're out of our Halloween phase, we're kind of going back to our regularly scheduled programming. And we finished Ozark, the Jason Bateman Netflix series. Holy crap, that was good. That was, I mean, really, really good. It felt very much like a Breaking Bad, Dexter Sons type of crime saga story. And I don't know, it was a good watch. I got Sonya to watch Ondine, the 2009 Colin Farrell film, where it's set in Ireland and he meets this Selkie. It's like a Irish folk tale, like a seal mermaid woman who comes out of the water, and he's a fisherman and he catches her in his net, and his daughter is willing to believe that she's what they call a Selkie, which is like a mermaid seal type of thing, and you know, she brings him good fortune and stuff. It's just such a great movie, but it looks like Man of Steel. It's very dour and dark and just kind of depressing, but it's such a great movie. And Chris, I finally finished Stranger Things 2.
Yay!
And I loved it. It was so good. Every bit as good as the first season, maybe a little bit more. I don't know. I'm still debating whether I liked it more. I don't know. But it just embodied everything that made the first season so great. I loved the transition of so many of the characters in that show that you kind of didn't like in the first season, you end up loving here. And it just, visually, it was outstanding. The music was great. You know, the finale was great. Hated the conclusion of Bob Newby superhero.
No crap, right?
Really bummed out about that. The character played by Sean Astin, and yeah, it was good. And I was kind of wondering what you were talking about with Paul Reiser. I was like, what is so great about Paul Reiser? And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. He was, you know, essentially a good guy, as far as we know right now. He's a good doctor there at the facility, so I don't know, man. It was just so great. I loved the map, the drawing map. I thought they had to do something visually big, like the Christmas lights last season. So I was like, I wonder what they're going to do this season, and they did the map thing, and that was pretty cool.
And that's what even sucks more about Bob. Like, without Bob, they don't find out
anything. They didn't do anything. Yeah, they can't find Hopper. They can't realize that it's a map. They can't even navigate the map. They can't get out of the facility once it shuts down because he's the only one who knows about computer technology there in the mid-80s. I mean, just Bob was the best. And he was just a nice guy. He loved her kids. He loved her. And then...
you know, season one, everybody's all justice for Barb. Now it's justice for Bob.
As it should be. Barb didn't do anything. She complained while she was at a party and then died. I'm sorry. I think Barb is emblematic of her physical appearance because she embodies that 80s look so perfectly that it's easy to use her as kind of a symbol for the production value of the show. But as far as providing any kind of great insight or plot development. She does, I mean, very little.
She is nowhere close to Bob.
No, Bob was the best.
Oh, and I just ordered my Christmas shirt for this year. Uh-huh. It says Snowball 1984.
Oh, nice. Nice. God, that broke my heart, man. Poor Dustin. Poor dude. But it ended up okay, I guess.
No, he pissed me off. And that's one of the things I liked about this season is, like, they progressed the boys by themselves.
Yeah.
And, like, there wasn't a lot of screen time with all of them together, which, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out very well. But the way the story was told, I mean, it worked out perfectly mm-hmm. for them. And they progressed all their characters. And they didn't even have to be together. And it was great. So
right. And Max was a great new addition to their little group, too. Mad Max. You know, she was really good. Her yeah. brother's a psychopath. But, dude, you know, what can you
crazy.
Do?
Crazy. If anybody should have died,
it should have been him. Sure. Yeah. But yeah, man, that's all I got. I knew you would be proud of me, because it didn't take me 2 years.
It just didn't.
I just needed one more week. That's it. But man, we pretty much binged it in one day. Mm-hmm. We watched all of them on a Saturday and a little on Sunday. But I was like, man, once we just get it going, we won't be able to stop.
Well, that's great. All right. Is that all you got, man?
Yeah, that's all I watched for this week.
Cool.
I mean, you know, shout out to the Regs, X-Files, and Party of Five.
Keep trucking.
Which, I'm on season 5 of both, so I'm almost done with Party of Five, and I'm kind of at the halfway mark with X-Files. So.
You know what, I should get back into it. I lost it for a long time, but I think I'm going to get back into Smallville again.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's just so bad.
It's not.
No, I meant like the CGI and the special effects. It's just so bad.
You know, a little bit of trivia on that. That was, at the time, had they transitioned to the WB or to the CW? I think they did. I don't really remember, but at the time, that was the most expensive show that they ever produced because they didn't have the kind of money that NBC and CBS and all those other shows had.
Right.
Plus, it was kind of the first big superhero primetime series. And, I mean, it's just kind of laughable to see shows like Flash and Legends utilizing really great CGI. Like, the CGI characters in the Flash. Like, King Shark. Man, that dude looked awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and Gorilla Grodd,
and
too.
And Gorilla Grodd.
I mean, he's no Andy Serkis or anything, no. But for television, it looks great. And they've come a long way.
Damn. So, yeah, I may be starting to pick that back up. I don't know. We'll see.
Do you have them, or are they streaming?
It's on Hulu.
Oh, that's right.
So, anyway. All right, as we move along, as always, it is time for Headlines with Steven.
Thank you, Chris. And I, as usual, will be running through these as quickly as possible because we've got quite a bit to cover here. And I'm really excited about our twist ending episode. Mm-hmm. Maybe the twist is we won't have headlines, but... Nope, we have them. Okay, so starting with our first headline. Universal Pictures, The Dark Universe, is pretty much done. I think that they killed it with The Mummy, and for its, you know, defense, I didn't think The Mummy was that bad. I mean, compared to the last few Mummy movies with Brendan Fraser, it was pretty good in that consideration, but it... usually speaks for the box office numbers, and I don't even think it crossed $100 million domestically.
No.
And so it just didn't work out. And they had Tom Cruise in there, and they thought, man, we can't even make a hit with Tom Cruise in this franchise. Forget it. So the aforementioned Bride of Frankenstein with Javier Bardem has been put on hold, so they say, and they have no longer further contacted Johnny Depp about the Invisible Man picture. So I think the writing is on the wall here, and the Dark Universe is about to be shown the light of death. And that's kind of unfortunate, because I was, I was looking forward to seeing what they would do with some of these old characters, and what
they can do some good stuff. They did not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know why this happened. I guess because I really did like some of the things they did with the Mummy, especially the ending. The ending sets it up really, really well, and you had an introduction to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in the Mummy. You had all kinds of cool stuff. And Russell Crowe was playing him. I mean, they were getting some legitimate actors to play some of these roles. And Javier Bardem as Frankenstein, like, that just seems crazy cool. And I don't know, but I guess we won't have to worry about it too much longer, unfortunately.
And, our friends from You Can Rewind It, Alexa and Brock, you know, we've had Brock on the show before. Oh, yeah. They actually just did a show on the Monster Squad.
Oh, yes.
And they were talking about, you know, how they would like to see some revamped stuff. And I kind of told them, hey, look, this is what's starting. And now I'm a liar. Thanks, Universal.
well, you weren't wrong at the time, if that makes you feel any better. So. But yeah, I mean, like you said, we still have the Monster Squad. Or Van Helsing, if you really care about that kind of stuff.
Oh, boy.
But, and speaking of one failing franchise to a thriving one, if you will, Star Wars Universe is not going anywhere. And it has been mentioned that Rian Johnson has been tapped to create an entirely new trilogy of the Star Wars franchise. Now, nothing has really been said about the plot, unless you guys have heard anything different.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so they're saying that it's going to be a new standalone trilogy that falls outside of the current timeline of episodes. You know, it's going to no longer fit in with an episode number. It's going to be its new trilogy, pressing onward, and I don't know if it's just going to eliminate all the characters from... I don't think that it would do something like that, but I don't know. It's just really interesting. And man, for them to give him creative control for three new Star Wars pictures must tell you that The Last Jedi is going to be one of the best Star Wars movies you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
He's going to write and direct that first one that he's going to do, and then they're going to have someone else come in and do the other two.
So he's basically the new J.J. Abrams of this trilogy.
Okay. Yeah, he's the new J.J.
So with this new trilogy, I don't know if y'all know or not. Are they doing... Along the timeline, where is it going to be at? Do y'all know?
Well, see, that's what they're not really disclosing any information. They haven't really said if it's going to coincide with the current timeline. I know that it's going to be past all of the existing stuff, so some of those characters might interweave in this new trilogy somehow, and it's going to be kind of hard to just... I mean, I know Rogue One essentially did it, but mm-hmm. Rogue One is a one-off movie. It works because it's a beginning and an end. It doesn't require you to stay with it for three movies, and although those characters in Rogue One were really good, I probably could have watched them in multiple movies. So, I don't know. I guess with good storytelling, they can keep new trilogy.
That universe is so rich with characters and everything. Right. Rian Johnson can come up with an original Star Wars idea that can last for three movies.
Yeah, easily. And, I mean, it's you're just tapping onto the well here. Like, we haven't even... I mean, just scratch the surface. Like, this Star Wars universe has been on lock and key by Lucas for so long that people have generated ideas over these last years and, you know, this last decade of time. And, man, people are real anxious to get these stories out there now. So, you never know.
Yeah.
But my next headline is Hollywood is... taken a very interesting turn as of lately, and I think for the positive. And the sexual assault claims are at an all-time high, and rightfully so, as they should be. You know, women should be able to voice their discomforts.
I totally 100% agree with you. But are we going to have anybody in Hollywood left?
This is our chance, fellas.
Yes,
because I know we wouldn't do anything like that.
Never. You know,
time to make some movies. Well, some notable names that I mentioned that apply to us are, for example, Andrew Kreisberg, who is the showrunner to The Flash, to Supergirl, to Arrow, to Legends of Tomorrow. Like, he is DC's go-to guy for television production, and he created this little Arrowverse, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I mean, with him out of the picture, it's kind of scary to see the quality of the programming taking a dive. And but then again, I think they've appointed the right people to get the stories told. So I don't think one guy's point of vision, I mean, some cases it does. Like, look what happened with Dexter when they took out the showrunners. It went took a nosedive. But or taking Dan Harmon out of Community. That show was a just terrible joke after he left. But you know, and it's just unfortunate. But another name is Brett Ratner. I guess nobody's really surprised that Brett Ratner would do something horrible, because he in himself is kind of a horrible guy. And they're actually kind of having an issue with this, because Gal Gadot said that she won't renew her contract for Wonder Woman 2 if he is still attached to Rat Pack Entertainment, which is one of the financiers of the picture, and Rat Pack is co-owned by Brett Ratner. So I don't know how they'll be able to manage that. Maybe they generated enough income to produce the movie on its own without using Rat Pack Entertainment as a production company to help them. But I mean, that's going to be interesting to see how that happens. And Louis C.K., he's another guy, one of my favorite contemporary comedians. And man, and he made that movie that I Love You, Daddy, which is about Hollywood executives preying on young women. So I'm just like, oh my God, this guy.
So he was just basic writing a biography?
Yes, and it's just so crazy that it just makes that whole movie just seem, ugh, you know, just like really nasty. Yeah. And then did you hear about Ed Westwick, Chuck Bass himself?
Really?
He has a couple of claims. And some of these claims also you have to kind of look at with a magnifying glass, because some of these women, and I'm not saying they're right or wrong, I never would do that, but you have to really look at the situation here. It's like, you know, you're partying with a superstar Hollywood celebrity at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and then you say he assaulted you. Like, these guys don't need to do, I mean, this is like the good-looking celebrity guys. Like, they have women fawning all over them, so it's, I don't know. But and then another one that I read just yesterday was Mark Schwann, the creator of One Tree Hill.
I was just about to ask you if you heard about this one.
Yeah, man. And every single female actress on One Tree Hill co-signed this petition about, or this claim about it. So I was like, oh, my God. Like, every single one of them. Like, this dude is toast. I guess he's currently running the Royals on CW. I've never seen the show, but
he won't be running anything very much longer.
And we always make a joke about how in One Tree Hill, characters say, I was in a dark place. They say it all the time. It's kind of a little trope. Like, if they say it in One Tree Hill, I was in a dark place. You know, we always make a joke about it because they say it so much. And he was like, well, Mark Schwann's definitely in a dark place now. I was like, yep, the unemployment line. Oh, and, but yeah, and then moving on from all that stuff, we have some really interesting news. The screenwriter Gary Dauberman, who wrote It, is in talks to write the Are You Afraid of the Dark movie. And I don't know if it's going to lend way to making Are You Afraid of the Dark more adult-oriented, which I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening. But I do think that he'll provide enough of an edge to the project to kind of make it a little bit more exciting. I know it's going to be garnered for kids and teenagers and stuff. But I think that you know, he can have some, bring some appeal to it to adults. I'm not gonna, it's not gonna be like a hard R-rated movie or anything, but, you know, pretty interesting PG-13. And my final headline that I read about today was that the HBO Western series Deadwood is coming back to HBO, but it's going to be for 1 2-hour movie. Essentially, what it's going to be doing is wrapping up all of the events from the first three seasons that we never got an ending to. And Jeremy, I know. Why are they not doing a Carnival movie? And I can't tell you why.
I know why they're not doing it. It makes perfect sense. It didn't get any ratings, even though it won tons of Emmys. Didn't matter.
You know, I was reading this interesting article the other day that I think you might be in luck with this, because I was reading that since HBO Go has come out and you can stream all the old shows and everything on it, I heard that Deadwood, The Wire, Carnival, and Oz, oh, and The Sopranos, are the just top five streaming series on that show right now, or on that website. So, you never know. I mean, people could raise up enough fuss to say, hey, what happened at the end of Carnival to get people to at least generate 1 2-hour motion picture for it?
No.
You never know.
There's,
I know you're not the optimist, but I'll be optimistic for you.
There's way more story to tell than a 2-hour movie.
Hey, but you could at least get some kind of closure.
He had barely scratched the surface of
what he wanted
to do.
Well, yeah, I get that, but what I'm saying is, like, you can get some kind of better than what you have now. Like, there's nothing now. It's just a swan dive off of a cliff.
No, it's a cornfield dying.
Well, yeah, that.
Swanton bomb.
But, you know, I mean, they could have benefited from a really good twist ending season finale, you know? Because I love a good twist ending.
And who doesn't? That's right. Not a damn nobody. So, this leads us into our main topic of the week, and it is twist endings, as we've been telling you. And, as always, Jeremy, let's kick it off, man. What is your number three movie for this category?
All right, let's start it off with some Donnie Darko. And if anybody's seen Donnie Darko, it's a very odd movie. It deals Jake Gyllenhaal, him and his sister, they both have a part in the movie. And, well, Jake is obsessed with this old lady and reading her book that she wrote about time travel. And the movie takes some weird turns, and the twist at the end, and I guess since we got to preface this with spoilers, even though this movie came out in 2001.
But, you know, since these are kind of older movies, some of our younger audience may have not watched any of these yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
Jake Gyllenhaal's girl dies, so to save her life, he travels back in time and ends his own life to let her live. Bam. Twist.
Nice.
I like how you added bam, twist. Perfect. All right.
Man, and I'm sorry, but director Richard Kelly was such a one-hit wonder with that movie.
Oh, my God. He's tried so hard since.
I mean, like, Southland Tales, and what was that one with Cameron Diaz? The Box?
The Box.
Horrible. Terrible movies. Just terrible movies.
Some of them are just so bad they're good, though.
I guess. Southland Tales
Southland Tales is like that. I mean, The Rock and Sean William Scott, it's a good combination. It just doesn't
work. In The Rundown.
In The Rundown.
They even had Sarah Michelle Gellar in there. I mean, it was just so stupid. I don't even know. That's the twist, is that he got to make movies after that.
I know.
I heard he's making a new movie in Corpus Christi, though, so that's kind of cool.
God.
I mean, he might deface Texas.
But... a new Selena movie.
Corpus is already defaced. He doesn't need to do it anymore.
I know it.
All right. Way to start us off. Okay, I'm going to go my number three. And my number three is 2006 Christopher Nolan's The Prestige.
Mm.
If you haven't seen this movie about two 19th century magicians, it's Hugh Jackman, Christian Bale. They're kind of like competing magicians trying to outdo each other. Who can do the best trick? And all of a sudden, Christian Bale's character is able to do... I forget what it's called, the disappearing man or reappearing man or something like that. And it's this trick to where there's these two doors. They're separated by nothing but air. They're just two doors separated from each other. And he goes in one door, bounces a ball, and comes at this other door and catches the same ball he just threw. And nobody can figure out how he's doing this trick. It drives Hugh Jackman insane. It goes into a part to where Hugh Jackman goes and finds Tesla? Is that who it is?
Yeah, Tesla.
Nikola Tesla, and they invent this machine to where it kind of... he clones himself, and then he starts killing his clones so he can match this trick and this and that, and... the big twist at the end is Christian Bale has an identical twin brother that they keep under wraps. And, you know, there's little hints throughout all of the movie where you can kind of tell, hey, they're a little bit different. And they explain it all at the end. But, you know, that's the huge twist for this movie was that Christian Bale, it wasn't really a trick. They let a set of identical twin brothers live one life. And it was all just for the show.
It's kind of like that Netflix, What Happened to Monday?
Yes.
They're all essentially the same person. They lose an appendage, you have to take off the appendage.
Yep. So. That's
my number three. Did y'all ever see The Illusionist with Edward Norton?
Yeah.
It also had a really good twist ending, and they were dueling magician movies that year, too.
Oh, yeah. And I love The Illusionist more than The Prestige.
It played as a better independent film, you know, more structured, but The Prestige was... it's in the title. It's all about this big, glorious production, and it looked great, and it is Nolan. Great. And it is Nolan, yes. And it is great, but I don't know. I flip back and forth. One day I'll say, yeah, you know, I do like The Prestige more. I'm like, nah, I like The Illusionist more. But, you know, The Prestige was, I mean, really good. It was right after Batman Begins. See, he did Batman Begins so he can make The Prestige.
Yeah.
Kind of like he did The Dark Knight to make Inception. You know, it seems to be a pattern. Dark Knight Rises to do Interstellar, and... it's just kind of like he's used Batman to make his movie.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he did. He was like, Warner Brothers offered him all this money to make a Batman trilogy. So he was like, all right, you're going to give me Batman. So I want to be able to make the movies I want to make.
I think it's safe to say that most of Nolan's movies... provide a certain twist, you know, like Memento and The Game. Man, those endings were all, and even following his first independent film, like they all had some crazy twist ending at the end. Pretty good.
Yeah. All right, so that's my number three. Steven, what do you got, my man?
Oh, I've got millions. Okay. I'll stick to the three. My number three pick is 1960s Alfred Hitchcock film Psycho. And I know it seems a bit contrived, if you will, but Hitchcock, ooh, yeah. But Hitchcock is known for this type of thing. He makes twist endings to movies. That's what he does. And Psycho, I watched it when I was about in eighth grade. Maybe I was a freshman in high school, not knowing anything about it. I knew of the shower scene. As a cinephile, I knew about the shower scene. But I always legitimately thought that his mom killed her and that his mom was still in existence. So when I actually watched the movie for the very first time, this is plus when, you know, in a time when we didn't have rampant spoilers, we didn't have social media, we didn't have people talking about all this stuff and spoiling stuff. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that it was Norman Bates who embodied his mom in a split personality, and he was killing people dressed as his mother. That shit freaked me out, man. I was like, what? Are you serious? And I just always, that always resonated with me. And it apparently resonated with people for 50 years, you know, and it's just such a great ending. And that movie's so good, it even spawned Bates Motel, a television series and contemporary, you know, timeline setting, and it still works. And they still manage to do twists and turns in that show. And again, you don't get that without the original Psycho. Mm. And of course, the Vince Vaughn remake, I don't really know why, but they just retreaded the same exact ending. I mean, it is a remake. I mean, that's kind of what they were doing with shot-for-shot remake for some reason.
Shot-for-shot, line-for-line, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, and so...
And then you got Vince Vaughn jerking off through a hole.
Yeah, that was... That's the real twist of the remake. But I just always thought the original stood the test of time, and it still does. Number three, Psycho.
Okay, so I'm going to go with my number two, and I'm going to kick off this with 2004's M. Night Shyamalan's The Village. It's easily, probably top 20 of my, in the top 20 of my favorite films of all time. It stars Joaquin Phoenix, Adrian Brody, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sigourney Weaver. And it also has a little part in there for Jesse Eisenberg. But, you know, the whole movie is kind of placed in this old time. I don't even know how far back.
I would say back in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Colonial time or something. Pilgrimage time.
And so... You know, the whole movie, you're just taking on this story of these people don't leave their village, really, because there's these big creatures in the woods that are going to eat you and kill you. And, you know, they have a color that you're not supposed to wear. I think the color's red. Uh-huh. And so this whole movie... I think Bryce Dallas Howard's character is a blind girl and falls in love with Joaquin Phoenix, and he's kind of an odd duck, so to say. He's real quiet. Anyway, things happen. I'm not going to give away the whole movie or anything, but at the end, Bryce Dallas Howard has to go and save Joaquin Phoenix because he's dying. And it turns out that they have secluded themselves so good and they've done such a great job that the town elders have really kept this secret really nice that they're actually in present day. And when she jumps over this hedge of bushes or whatever, and then you see an actual paved road... And then you see a car coming. Like, you cannot help but to say, what the fuck? Like, that's were my exact thoughts. And I watched it. I think I talked about when I watched this not too long ago. I knew it was going to happen, and I knew all the endings. But when that happens, I still said, damn, what the fuck? It's just so crazy that, you know. You get so into this movie being the time that it's in, the era that it's in, that you would never in a million years think that it's the way it ends up. So that is my number two, The Village.
I think you could have just said M. Night Shyamalan, and that's it.
Yeah.
The dude is kind of, that's his thing, you know? We even have a thing here at the house where we constantly say Shyamalan twist, you know? It's just, some are good, some are bad, you know? But yeah, I think the majority of his endings are pretty good. I'm definitely not looking at The Happening or The Last Airbender, but, or After Earth, but, you know, he built his career on stuff like The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, Signs, and Signs didn't really have that big punch as far as a true Shyamalan twist ending, but, you know, Village was a follow-up to that, so I think it reestablished his storytelling ability, and, you know, Unbreakable, I love that ending, and, I mean, even Split ties into Unbreakable, that's kind of the twist of that, it's just kind of what he does.
Yep, yep, so... All right, onward. Steven, your number two.
My number two is the much critically approved film, The Usual Suspects? I can't say suspects. The Usual Suspects, starring Kevin Spacey. It's hard to talk about Kevin Spacey movies right now, I guess, you know, but... you know, there's some things that you just can't deny as far as... And I'm just speaking solely on filmmaking ability, and The Usual Suspects was another one of those movies. It was Bryan Singer's pretty much coming out party to Hollywood saying, hey, I'm a great director. And it was just one of those things where you're watching it, and everything just gets totally flipped on a dime when you find out that the guy that the entire police force has been searching for was sitting right there in the office narrating this massive elaborate lie just to see what the police did and did not know, and it was just crazy. I loved the reveal. I loved how it turned out, and The Usual Suspects is one of the best endings I have ever seen.
Who is Kaiser Sose?
Who is Kaiser Sose?
Sose? Alright. Jeremy, what do you got for number two, man?
Okay, number two. Well, I will go with my favorite movie, and that would be Fight Club. Brad Pitt, Edward Norton. And throughout the movie, you have an unnamed narrator telling you this story about how he can't sleep and how he's trying to find other things to make him sleep. And, well, he eventually finds some things and goes to therapy or these support groups, different people. And all throughout this entire time, these flashes of Brad Pitt come on the screen. And then about halfway through the movie, or a little bit before that, half an hour into the movie, I would say, you get your introduction to Brad Pitt, and then you get Fight Club, and then Project Mayhem, and you get Brad Pitt and Edward Norton playing off Brad Pitt, and at the very end, you get the twist, and the twist is Edward Norton is Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is Edward Norton. They're both the same person. One has very delusional tendencies and likes to think he's somebody else doing other things. And, yeah, he's insane. And that's the great thing about that movie. He's just an insane dude.
Yes, he is.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Oh, excuse me, guys. All right. So, as always, Steven has a list of about 1,000. So, instead of me and Jeremy rattling off some honorable mentions, I'm going to take the time and let Steven just quickly go through the rest of his before we get to number ones.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to go into detail of every single one of them. I'm just going to say the name, and it's going to be up to the listener to go out and research these movies and watch these movies and be totally surprised, considering we are spoiling the hell out of all of our picks. So here we go. American Psycho, Memento, The Others, 7, Saw, Old Boy, Dark City, Primal Fear, The Game, Sleepaway Camp, The Crying Game, Frailty, Vanilla Sky, and Minority Report. Now, these are some movies with some really great twist endings. So, if you like to be shocked and surprised, watch every single one of the movies that I just mentioned. Thank you for your time.
I have a question. Dark City did not have a twist ending. I'm sorry. That is not a twist ending.
Chris, how much time do we have? I'm about to school this fool. How is that not a twist ending?
The dude can do what the aliens can do.
Yeah, do you know why? You need to go back and watch Dark City, man. The whole movie, they're not even on Earth. They're on
their own little planet thing.
Yeah, it's a recreation of the city that they all thought they lived in on Earth, but it all takes place in a spaceship. They're all basically just science experiments. Mm-hmm. That is the definition of a twist.
Jeremy, it sounds like you have homework to do, my friend.
That's a good movie.
It's a great movie. I just don't think that's much of a twist ending.
Yeah, but it's still present. You know, well, I will
because
say though,
when he blows that one dude out the wall and it's into deep space, you know, it's you know how it's going to end. They're not on Earth, duh.
But did you know that? Do you honestly sit here and tell me that you knew that they weren't on Earth the entire movie?
No, but
that's the freaking twist.
But when he blew that dude out the wall, that wasn't the end of the movie.
Yeah, but that's a reveal. That's a reveal to the twist. The twist doesn't necessarily have to take place at the end of the movie, I suppose. But some things could take place in the middle of a movie where it completely alters. You know, I had a long argument with my wife, and now I'm having a long argument with my other wife. And we were talking about how 7 wasn't a twist ending. I was like, how is 7 not a twist ending?
And
like,
I don't think that's a twist either.
Oh, my God.
Kevin Spacey cut Gwyneth's head off and put it in a box.
Did you know that was going to happen? The whole movie, they're trying to figure out who is, I mean, the whole thing is mm-hmm. 7 deadly sins. Each case pertains to each sin. So you honestly sit there and say that you knew that David Mills, played by Brad Pitt, was going to be the 7th sin of wrath due to the fact that his wife's head was in a box. Like you knew that was going to happen. You sit there and tell me you knew that shit was going to go down that way. No freaking way, man.
I knew it the whole time.
Yeah, Chris leaned over.
I knew it when Morgan said, there's blood.
Yeah. Moving on. I'm about to have a freaking aneurysm. My head's going to blow up like scanners.
All right. So number one, let's see. Who hasn't started? Steven.
I haven't.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm still trying to process this. It hurts. It hurts so much. But this number one movie, and mind you, these aren't my favorite movies, but I just happen to really respond to the endings. And this one is Terry Gilliam's 1995 masterpiece, 12 Monkeys. Does that have a twist ending, Jeremy?
Dude, that entire movie's just twisted as all hell.
Fair enough. The whole movie is about a man sent from the future to go back in time to try and prevent this group called the 12 Monkeys from releasing this biological virus that pretty much wipes out humanity, leaving them in the dystopian future in which he currently inhabits. So the whole movie you're thinking, okay, he's got to make friends with Brad Pitt, who seems to be in a lot of these type of movies. He picks his projects very well.
Yeah,
and
he does.
He is in league with the 12 Monkeys. They're bizarre, they're maniacal, they're just insane. So he's still trying to figure out how is it that these idiots pull apart and pull off the biggest ecological disaster in history. Well, come to find out that they don't. At the very end of the movie, well, actually throughout the whole movie, he himself as a child has these reoccurring dreams of him as a child seeing this man being shot in an airport, and he doesn't know why he saw, or he doesn't know why this happened, but it did happen, so he has this reoccurring nightmare about it. Turns out that at the end of the movie, he was the guy that got shot, and he himself saw him as a little boy getting shot, trying to prevent the true terrorist from releasing this virus, because the 12 monkeys had nothing to do with the virus, and it freaked me out. I was just, like, completely blown away by the ending, never predicted it, and it was just so insane how it evolved into that. And it's kind of like how I felt watching Frailty. You know, I mentioned Frailty, where, you know, everybody, and McConaughey's performance in that, and it's just like, oh, so he's the guy that did this and that, and it's just one of the best endings to any movie I've ever seen. It's definitely not feel good. The disaster, the virus goes on as planned, destroys half of the world, and Bruce Willis dies on the floor, and I was completely shocked. 12 monkeys.
Nice. Very nice.
Spoilers, by the way.
All over the place. We've already given the warning, so.
But man, right. It's just, and like Jeremy said, though, that whole movie is just,
oh God,
it's just crazy.
It time jumps from this time to that time to this time to that time, back to this time, back to that time.
Yeah, it's just, it never lets you up. And then at the end, you're like, okay, they're going to pull this off. Oh, wait, so he's the guy that got killed this whole time. Yeah, this sucks.
That's Terry Gilliam for you.
That's for sure, but damn good movie.
Cool. All right, Jeremy. You're number one.
All right, my number one, I'm going with a movie that Steven was pissed at me for the longest time because I spoiled the ending for him. Arlington Road. Tim Robbins and Jeff Bridges. I mean, it's just your basic terrorism movie. Home terrorism movie, kind of like the Oklahoma City bombing thing. This is your fictional retelling of something along those lines. And you got all these conspiracies going on, and Jeff Bridges thinking Tim Robbins is this psychomaniacal terrorist, and he's acting like this humble family man, but you can tell he's, you know, well, he's Tim Robbins, so he looks like a weirdo anyway. But, yeah, and then the twist comes at the end, and when I spoiled it for Steven, because Tim Robbins is essentially the bad guy throughout the entire movie, and, yeah, he kills Jeff Bridges, and he wins, and I spoiled it for Steven and pissed him off.
I can't believe you told me that ending. It's been 20 years. It's the 20-year anniversary of the Arlington Road spoiler controversy. It came out in 1997. And
99.
Oh, it wasn't 99? I thought it was 99. Yeah. Okay, so it's the 18-year anniversary. And I was just, I don't know, maybe you were just, like, really excited about
I don't think at that point I hadn't seen many movies where the bad guy just straight up won like
very
that.
Rarely. You're right. And I thought, did you just tell me that the bad guy won? Like, what? And you're like, yeah, he kills him. And I'm like, what? Stop talking. And to this day, I still say Arlington Road. Like, it's just even in common vernacular. I'm like, hey, man, so how was the movie? But don't Arlington Road it for me.
And most people are like, what the hell are you talking about?
I know. Like, the movie's not even that great, except for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's the last 15 minutes that makes that movie great. The first hour and 15 minutes is just, yeah.
You remember how excited we were for Scream 3 because the writer Aaron Kruger, he pretty much blew up because of Arlington Road. So when we heard he was going to write Scream 3, we were thinking, oh my God, this guy's going to kill Neve Campbell. He's going to kill Dewey. He's going to kill Courtney Cox.
They're,
he's going to kill
everybody.
They're
all going to die. And,
none of them died. We were like, aw, this wimp. But yeah, and I had to go see that before you did. Otherwise, you'd ruin it for me. But yeah, good pick.
All right. So I'm going to close this out. I'm going to close this out with probably the best twist in movie cinematic history. And, you know, I'm not spoiling anything because if you haven't heard about this little movie called Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, well, I don't know what to tell you. But finding out that Darth Vader is actually Luke's father. I mean, you can't get any more twisted than that. Right?
Yep. Yeah. Man, what I wouldn't give to be able to see that when it had come out.
Yeah.
Fresh. I mean, not knowing anything about it.
Yeah. We go into it with a completely different view of the entire thing, unlike someone that's 10, 15 years older than us that saw it in the theater, because none of us saw it in the theater. So we knew going into the Empire Strikes Back when we first watched it, we knew that Darth Vader was Luke's dad.
I mean,
so,
you couldn't. I mean, our generation, our age, you know, you can't go and not talk about Star Wars and not talk about, you know, the line, the Luke, I am your father, and not know what it means.
Which is actually, no, I am your father. That's something that people always confuse it to. Right. They want to say, Luke, I am your father, but it is in fact, no, I am your father.
No!
That's the wrong no, by the way. But Jeremy's right. Like, I saw them backwards. I watched Jedi Strikes Back and then Star Wars when I was a kid. I don't know why. That was just what was available to me. Right. And I mean, I don't think it diminishes the film by any means. It's still a great movie. That's why Empire is probably one of the best in the entire franchise. Let me tell you a quick story. When we got the Blu-ray, when the Blu-rays first came out, back in, what, 2010, 2011, 2012, something like that, I watched them all with my wife and kids, and they had never seen any of them. Even Sonya, who hasn't seen any of them, she just didn't have any interest. So I said, look, we're going to watch episodes 1 through 6, just how they were meant to be. Besides, you get the shitty ones out of the way first. And but what was
high note.
Right, but the kids had no idea about the game. Connor kind of did because he played Lego Star Wars and it ruined the ending for him. But Madison had no idea. And she's like, I don't know, 10, 11, 10, 9? I don't remember. But we were watching it, and so they're watching Anakin Skywalker. So in Revenge of the Sith, when Emperor Palpatine, or Darth Sidious, whatever, he's like, I now pronounce you Lord Vader. She was freaking the hell out. She had no idea that Anakin Skywalker was Darth Vader. She was just, what? What? No, no. Like, I think she was going to cry. And I was like, yeah, he's Darth Vader. And she's like, Anakin's dad, Luke and Leia, like, isn't he their dad? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, this can't be. Like, she was so, just as the kids say, shook. You know, she didn't know what to think. And I was watching it just so jealous of her, because I was like, man, I would kill to get to have that reaction watching these movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a great, great ending.
So, all right. So that closes us out for this week. Guys, do you have anything else to say about twist endings?
I love them. I love a good twist. I love when I'm watching a movie and it completely flips and gives me something that I was not expecting.
Mm-hmm. And you know what kind of puzzles me, Steven? Either you or me didn't have any Tarantino movies, and he's a master at twist endings.
He is. I was actually thinking of his catalog, and I think he has, like, shocking results to stuff. Like, you're right, though. I don't I don't know why I wasn't thinking, because, I mean, Reservoir Dogs, who was the rat, you know, yeah, that's presented in that. And then Pulp Fiction really doesn't have too many, no, but, you know, the ending of Django and Hateful Eight was filled with just, holy shit.
That was just one twist after another.
Yeah, so, I mean,
the way it ended.
Yeah, definitely the way it ended. But, yeah, I'm pretty surprised, too. We pretty much covered all the other favorite filmmakers of ours, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, guys. Guys, if y'all have a movie that we didn't mention, shout us out on our social media. Let us know what your favorite twist ending in the movie is, if we haven't said it here. Okay, if you, since you're here already listening to us, go ahead, hit that subscribe button right up above, and then leave us a 5-star review. It just helps us get seen, and it helps us get out there more into the world. You can find us on iTunes, which is at now Apple Podcast. I keep messing that up. Stitcher, Google Play, pretty much anywhere you can find podcast, Pocket Cast. There's some others that we're out there on, but just go look for us. We're out there. Also, if you're in the social media world, you can follow us on all of our social media accounts, Instagram and Facebook. We're just search for the Screen Addicts Podcast, and on Twitter, search for Screen_Addicts, and that is spelled ADDICS. And, you know, we're pretty active on everything. Twitter's probably our most active. But also a big announcement. We are now big boys. And we just rolled out our new website today.
Yay!
Which is actually yesterday. But you know what I mean. It's screenaddictspodcast.com. Guys, go take a look. It has all of our past episodes, and it will have the link to our newest episode, couple our bios and stuff like that. And I don't know if I'm going to put our ugly mugs up there yet or not, but we'll see. We are also a part of the Indie Popcorn Podcast Network. Guys, this is fairly new for us being a part of this network, and we're so excited to be a part of it. A bunch of great shows. Just search for the Indie Popcorn Podcast Network, and you can go and take a look and listen to all the great content on there. So I think that is all for this week. Next week, there's only one thing on our minds, fellas. One thing. And that is the Justice League.
The League.
Jeremy?
What's up?
I may have to fight you next week. The justice will be brought, my friend. We'll see, though. You know, I gave your Marvel movie a good review.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to have to reciprocate, buddy. Okay? Okay.
Well, he won't if the movie sucks. It has to be good.
If the movie sucks, then there's just nothing you can do about it.
Just fake it, Jeremy.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
I mean, if it's more Zack Snyder fluff, then there's just nothing you can do about it.
That's true. Have y'all heard anything about it? Are y'all trying to stay away from spoilers and stuff?
I did mention to Jeremy that I heard the critical response was pretty good. It was actually really good. And they were actually letting the critics speak and not just a group of Warner Brothers employees like they did for Batman v Superman. They're like, well, we had a screening party and everybody loved it. I'm like, yeah, well, they're employed by you, so they're supposed to say that. So
they probably had to say that.
Right. So they wisely allowed the early screenings for critics to reveal and tweet out some of their things. I mean, they have the confidentiality agreement, but they were all pretty excited. So that's one thing, you know, that Batman v Superman didn't have, so...
You know,
I don't know.
The couple of tweets that I've seen is, you know, it's not perfect, but it is fun. And that's what, that's one thing I keep seeing as of right now, is that it is, it's at least really fun. So, we'll see. We shall see. When are you going to watch, Steven?
I'm going to shoot out there Thursday night, I think.
Thursday night. You going alone?
Maybe.
Apparently, it's a family affair for me. I'm taking Maddox, my mom, my dad, my sister, and her fiancé.
Wow.
Damn.
Yes. So we'll see. I'll probably have all of them talk about it on the podcast, and then some other people also, so we'll see. But as for me, guys, thank you for joining this week. Really appreciate you and listening, and tell your friends about us. But as for me, good night.
Adios, amigos.
Have a twisty evening.
Ooh. Mm.
Thank you for listening to the Screen Addicts Podcast. Subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play,